this contract that we are supposed to see an award on sometime by the end of the year, maybe into next year, actually began in 2001, sort of in a different form back when it was this sole source leasing arrangement to Boeing rather than a competition between Boeing and EADS, the big European aircraft manufacturer. So this thing really has gone through iterations and various acts, and I doubt we'll be seeing the real conclusion of it anytime soon.
Yeah, I mean, we're supposed to see it soon, but I mean, anyone who's followed this for any length of time isn't holding their breath, are they?
That's right. That's right. There have been just too many twists and turns in this. And frankly, you know, it's a real the story ultimately shows, I think, what's really broken in the procurement process right now. And in a contract like this, where you have so many individual requirements and so many places for companies and lawyers to protest and to nitpick what the Air Force does in its review, and particularly one with this, where the stakes are this high. I mean, there's a $40 billion contract on the line. I think it's almost it's undoubtable, I think, that someone is going to protest this award, whoever loses. So even if there is an award by the end of the year or early next year, I think it's almost a given that there will be a protest on it.
And in some ways, I mean, your story is so great because it goes through all the details of this. And you say the headline is great. Replacing a 50-year-old airplane has turned into a decade-long saga, ones that cost a CEO his job, sent two officials to jail, and wasted millions of dollars. In so many ways, this is what not to do in a procurement system.
That's right. It's really, I mean, it's a cautionary tale if ever there was one. I mean, you know, and in fact, the matter is, too, is that what happened in the early stages of this in terms of the illegal behavior, the malfeasance, was extraordinary by any means. And, of course, you mentioned the CEO having resigned. This was the CEO of Boeing resigning in the wake of a scandal that revealed that a former senior Air Force official who'd been negotiating the contract deal was actually on the side negotiating a deal to go work for Boeing. That was pretty extraordinary by any standard. But even the two sort of follow-on acts, there was a competition which was then protested and over and the contract was canceled, and we're on the third round now. Even they have really been models of how not to do a procurement, I think. They've been enormously complex, highly politicized. And ultimately, I mean, I think it's fair to say that the needs of the Air Force are not being put first and foremost here. And we have to remember, you know, this tanker aircraft is absolutely essential to projecting military force in the world. We do not fight wars today without this plane.
And it's been almost essential to the United States dominance, particularly in the air.
That's right. That's right. I mean, the tanker is the reason that our Air Force owns the sky. We can go anywhere we want to go. We can put our fighters in the air. They can fly where they need to go. We can put the stealth bomber, you know, take it off a runway in the United States and be bombing a target in Iraq 24 hours later, however long it takes to get there. It's really, I mean, it makes us mobile and agile. I mean, troops do not simply deploy overseas anymore, you know, in ships the way they might have half a century ago. They fly there. And in order to get to these destinations, you have to be able to refuel in the air. So it's an absolutely essential component of modern warfare, the tanker is.
And yet we're using this tanker, which dates back to the Eisenhower years.
Yeah, it's a very, very old plane. And it's important to remember, you know, the aircraft has been re-outfitted with new engines, with new wings even in some cases. But essentially, this is a very, very old 50-year-old airframe. And, it's good that it has held up for as long as it has, although there have been some real problems, I think, with deterioration over time. But it's going to have to keep holding up for a while, because even if this contract is awarded sometime in the next few months, it will still be a number of years before the first replacement airplanes, the first 200 or so as planned, come online. And then you still have, you know, future replacements to get rid of the rest of the fleet. So this plane's going to have to be around for quite some time to come.
Well, and you write in there that there are, I mean, the plane's been around for a while, and this age does have its impact.
That's right. There was a real problem back in 2001, or late 90s into 2001. There were a number of different problems with Air Force officials spotting corrosion in the skins of the aircraft. That became something that officials were very worried about. There was a rather spectacular crash of a tanker in January of 1999 that was blamed on an unexplained malfunction in the rear stabilizer of the aircraft, which actually caused the plane to essentially nosedive into the ground and killed the crew. So there were a number of real problems. And aside from these more spectacular incidents, the time that the tankers have been spending in the maintenance depot, kind of getting their tune-up, if you like, to be in flying condition has increased dramatically. So, you know, it's not just a matter of big failures. It's also just the basic wear and tear and the fact that it's taking longer and longer to get these planes into flying shape.
How much of the problems related to this are tied to politics? Because this has been a very political process. EADS has given all sorts of money to Republican senators, mostly in the South. Boeing having the folks up in the Northwest, of course, Maine, even Alaska. Ted Stevens was involved. And then Senator McCain playing a big role in this as well.
Yeah, politics has played an outsized role in this from the beginning. You know, we often talk about and debate, I think, what is the real effect of political influence in the procurement process. I think here it's undeniable. I mean, I talked to a number of analysts on this for this story who really believe that the Air Force is waiting to make a decision on who, which company to award this contract based on who won the midterm elections. And so, you know, we'll see whether or not the fact that Republicans took the House means that maybe EADS now has an advantage. And I don't know how you could ever really definitively prove it, but the mere fact that everyone involved believes that politics is guiding this, I think that's extraordinary. And, you know, I've reported on contracting for a decade. I've never seen an instance where politics played such a huge driving role, and where it was not only feeding the perception of what was happening, but in many instances was actually directing how these contracts would work. I mean, you mentioned Ted Stevens. In 2001, the reason the Air Force decided to go with a leasing arrangement with Boeing was in part because Ted Stevens wrote language into an authorization bill specifically saying the Air Force must lease 767 aircraft from Boeing.
Yeah. And this is the kind of thing, you know, when people get angry about the procurement process, hold on, you're not, in a way, the procurement process wasn't allowed to do what it does fairly well in most instances. There was so many fingers mucking around in the soup.
That's right. There were a lot of people mucking around in the soup. But it's also fair to say, too, I mean, the Air Force, I think, deserves some blame for this as well. I mean, the round of competition that pitted Boeing against Northrop Grumman, which was partnering with the EADS a number of years ago, I mean, the GAO review of that competition after Boeing protested the award to Northrop Grumman found it really extraordinary flaws on the part of the Air Force. I mean, if you read that protest decision, it's a condemnation, I think, of the process. So the blame really goes around, I think, equally. And as much as this is an extraordinary example of a contract gone wrong, I think it is really sort of reflective of basically how business gets done in this town today.
And from that cautionary tale, are there lessons that other folks can take from this about how to conduct contracts or good procurements or how not to?
Well, you know, that's a really great question. And I mean, and one of the things that I talked to about people in this, talked to people about in this story was how do you avoid this in the future? And, you know, and one of the ideas I think is, and this won't sit well in all quarters, but is to stop trying to make these contracts so enormously complex. I mean, there are hundreds of individual requirements that have to be met on the tanker as it exists now. There's an argument for simplifying this process, as there has been in a lot of other procurements, as you know. So that could do some good. I think also taking the politics out of it. I mean, there's no doubt that anytime you're talking about thousands of American jobs being on the line, depending on which company wins, which district they're going to be in, which state, the politics are going to play a role. But, you know, I think it used to be the case that politics sort of stopped at the water's edge when it came to national security and these priorities, and that clearly has not been the case in this contract, which is undeniably central to American national security.
And jobs. I mean, where we're, you know, go 10 seconds and listen to any station and hear them not talk about jobs.
That's right. And we are living, you know, given the dramatically high unemployment rate, it's to be expected that members of Congress would be really concerned over who wins this because it's going to mean jobs for their district. But, you know, that said, I mean, that can't be allowed, I think, to become the overriding factor in what is arguably a procurement for a vital weapon system. I mean, there's just no way around that.
And almost impossible to, it sounds almost hyperbole to say how important this plane is to national defense. This is a very, very important contract.
That's right. And it's very important for the companies who are vying for it. I mean, I talked to folks who said there's a real chance that if Boeing were to lose this contract, it could be the beginning potentially of a major decline in its defense business. EADS really wants to win this too. To demonstrate that they can win a major military contract. They've had some success with foreign air forces selling this plane, but they really need an American win. So, I mean, the stakes are just as high as they can be for everybody involved, Air Force, the Congress, and the companies who are vying.
As you were reporting this, was there some piece that just was a little bit almost surprising to you?
I think what was surprising to me was the degree to which in the early stages of the leasing deal back in 2001, how brazen some members were in the politics of it. But the most surprising thing to me actually came in an interview that I had with James Roach, who was the Secretary of the Air Force at the time, that the leasing arrangement really kind of hit the skids. And the chief opponent of that arrangement was, of course, Senator John McCain. And Roach told me a story that it's never been reported before, which is that the origin, as far as Roach is concerned, of his animosity towards John McCain, who he once considered a friend, stemmed from a conversation, an exchange they had many years ago after Roach's son had died suddenly. And McCain really sort of, in Roach's mind, gave him the cold shoulder and was very insensitive in some of his remarks about his son having passed away. And it's in the story, but it's this very remarkable moment where Roach really sort of becomes convinced that John McCain is not the good man he thought he was. And he told me he decided at that moment that he would never yield to him on anything should they ever come face to face again. And in fact, they did on the tanker deal. And this is one of the reasons that it had gone unsaid for a long time of why there was so much bad blood between the Secretary of the Air Force and McCain. It wasn't just about the contract. This was deeply personal from Roach's point of view. That was surprising to me of how that real animosity played a huge role in dictating what the Air Force did.